Good morning, and thank you for tuning in to listener-supported WDRT 91.9 on the radio dial. You're listening to The Skeptical Naturopath with Paul Rattay and Christina DeRocher. Hi, Paul.
Hi, Christina. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. I'm excited to get into the book that you want to talk about, The Glucose Revolution,
Yes.
Jesse Inchauspe.
Yes.
Inchauspe.
Yeah, so I mean, we kind of set the plate last month. So now, and I had talked about pre-diabetes and like who should be paying attention to this. And understand that, not just knowing your fasting insulin and these other things, or just that you kind of have this reactive hypoglycemia, but are all sorts of other symptoms that can kind of appear from that. So not just being hangry, but being concentration, poor response to stress, poor sleep. These things can be related to, glucose variability. So these are all things, other reasons that people may say, hey, maybe I need to figure out what my glucose tolerance is, even though it's not necessarily on the diabetes spectrum yet. So I think that there's, still certainly a lot of value to understanding how you tolerate and manage carbohydrates, right? So, anyways, so maybe we'll just jump right into that, right? So the whole idea that she's trying to look at is to avoid the glucose spikes, right? So the spike means, again, so you haven't eaten and then you just eat you eat something that's all carbohydrate, right? Carbohydrate, like simple carbohydrates. So, like, can you give me an example of what would be
Oh my
like
gosh, there's
toxic?
endless examples, right? I mean, that's your oatmeal and your cream of wheat and your, I mean, almost everything that we eat usually is carbs for breakfast, right?
Yeah, that's the breakfast thing, right? So we're breaking our fast and we're breaking it with, totally refined, high glycemic carbohydrates. But, it kind of makes sense, right? We haven't eaten. Hey, we need energy. The whole idea is, do we need quick energy? Do we need slow energy? Like, what are we looking for? But you're like, oh, I'm just going to eat cereal, right? So cereal typically is like completely processed. High glycemic index, it's going to give you energy right away. But understand, that's why we eat cereal, right? Except maybe, when you get older, you eat all bran because you want fiber. Maybe now you're not looking for quick energy. But, most people, they're just like, hey, I got quick energy. I'm going to use skim milk because it's better for me, right? Because it's low fat. So now you're basically not getting any fat that may help sort of mitigate that a little bit. And then you drink your orange juice and you have a bagel or a piece of toast. I mean, that is like big time glucose spike. And then as a result of that, what can happen? 2 hours later, 3 hours later, you're like, I gotta eat a snack because I'm
Crashing.
falling, right? So it's, again, it's the rise and the fall. And so it's going on the roller coaster. And we like the mild thing instead of the wild thing. Right, we'd like to go up gently and come down gently. We'd actually like to go up gently over a long period of time, if that makes sense, instead of spiking it so quickly. But again, in that diabetic that's hypoglycemic crisis, we want to get them up as quick as possible, right? Because now they're, in the danger zone. Anyways, so that's the glucose spike, and those are the things that we're trying to avoid. And I mean, that's good for anybody. The question is that, what's your symptom picture that has a, is part of that? And then by making some changes, can you say, hey, wow, I see something different, or I feel something different, right? Anyway, so that's the point of the book and giving you some options and ideas and ways to manage that. So maybe we'll just go through these principles. Let me count them. I didn't count them. One, two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight, nine. She's got 10. 10 that she lists in the book, right? So the first one is eat foods in the right order. So what do you think about that? I ask you what you think that right order is.
Well, for me personally, macrobiotically speaking, you eat from yang to yin. So you eat the heavy food that would sit on the bottom of your stomach first, and then you finish with, say, if you're eating fruit in a meal, which I know is controversial, you would eat that last, or dessert. and certainly liquids would go last. In this context, though, I would assume it would be protein first, protein leads.
Yeah, so what I think is most important is what you said, is to keep those carbohydrate, those quick energy foods at the end of the meal. Don't start your meal with them, right? So her order is basically fiber first, then protein and or fat, and then end with starch or sugar, right? So so that's the idea, that you're now looking at how these individual foods will affect that glycemic response, right? So already we can say, what does fiber do to your blood sugar?
It regulates it.
Yeah, it basically slows down the digestion of anything, right? And it kind of depends on the type of fiber too, right? Because you can have soluble fiber and insoluble fiber, right? You know the difference between those?
Soluble means it's able to dissolve in water or liquid.
That's right.
One can do that, and one
can't.
And one stays rogue, right? And
yep.
Does its own thing.
It does its own thing. And that's kind of like, you know, I'll just use apple as an example. So the apple pectin, right, the inside, it holds water. That's soluble fiber. Mm. And then the peel mm-hmm. of the apple is insoluble fiber, right? There's no water there. It repels water, right? So it's going to work different in your digestive tract. So insoluble fiber, the peel, is basically going to sort of like scratch your intestinal lining, right? Because you don't break it down. I mean, you break it down just by what you chew, but your enzymes, you don't have the ability to break that down. So then that's why you see, you know, food in your, you know, undigested food in your stool, because that's going to be the part that your enzymes can't break down. Right, so then
corn is famous for that.
Exactly, because of the fibrous coat in the corn, you're not dealing with it. But you chew it and you release what's inside, right? And then you'll absorb the starch inside the kernel. But then the whole idea is how much do you have to chew that corn up so that you can that you don't see it in your stool, or like seeds, right? So seeds from raspberries and things. I don't know. I kind of, you know, I'm a texture guy. Like I love that kombucha that's got the chia seeds in it. Huh? Do you ever drink that?
I don't drink kombucha because I've always wondered about the sugar content.
Yeah, some of those companies say, I think they put sugar in after they ferment it, and you can't really tell. But you can tell by how sweet it is.
Right.
But yeah, you're right. But
that's always been my bugaboo about that, honestly, is the fact that it's a sugar-based product.
That's right. Did they let it ferment long enough and become vinegar? And how vinegary is it? And the more vinegar, the better, as far as I'm concerned. But that's just when they stop the fermentation. And then whether they add sugar after the fact, or then they add stevia, or they add some other fake sugar that I don't like, right? So they're trying to like mask it or do whatever. Just like, just give me vinegar. I don't have a problem with that.
Well, right. And then the question becomes, though, isn't that an interesting, you don't want to have a lot of vinegar all the time, though, either, right? So you wouldn't have, I don't know about kombucha as a daily food stuff, like some people recommend.
Yeah, I mean, it's good bacteria. You get a whole broad spectrum of bacteria. Is vinegar a good thing for you, not good thing for you? You're going to see that Jesse really likes it. I kind of like it too, but we'll talk about that. That's coming up. But anyways, it's funny, the rabbit hole we
digress
go on, right?
Easily.
But it's because I like that chia seeds in there, right? Because I like that texture, right? So it's a texture thing. It's like, I like tapioca because I like the feel of the, you know, that's just a thing for me, right? but so that's just like eating, you know, the seeds from a raspberry, for example. So I kind of play this game, right? Because you get the seed in there and you're like, I'm just going to swallow this whole. I'm not breaking it down. I actually have to chew and grind that seed to be able to release what's in the seed if I'm looking for anything from that seed, right? And think about it. The seed's just protecting itself.
Yeah,
it's outer coating. So it's going to make its way through your digestive tract. It'll come out in your stool. It'll go somewhere, and then it can, you know, grow from wherever, you know, where, you know, that whole process. So you chew that, you now, but you know how hard it is to do that, right? I kind of play that game like I'm trying to chew the, you know, the raspberry seeds. And it's hard to do. But anyway, so that seed would be, in that case, considered to be fiber, right? It's just basically going to agitate the lining of your GI tract. So somebody that's got diverticulitis, right, where they have these little outpouches in their intestines, specifically their large intestine, that's going to bother them. They're going to get seeds in there, and it's going to agitate them, and they're going to have symptoms from that. Right, but that's insoluble fiber. But insoluble fiber does a really good job to agitate the lining and get things moving, right? Because when you agitate the lining of your intestinal tract, you kind of scratch it a little bit or whatever. Then your peristalsis, right? That's that muscle movement that happens that, you know, basically pushes from the mouth downward. Right, really super important that we get that's working. Like with constipation, we think, oh, well, more fiber. Well, what kind of fiber, right? So that kind of fiber is going to, like, agitate and increase peristalsis. Whereas the soluble fiber now absorbs water, so it's going to create more bulk in your stool. So understand, somebody's already constipated and they do a lot of soluble fiber, that may actually kind of make them worse.
Oh, my gosh, that exact same thing happened this weekend, actually, or last weekend, I guess it's been a week now, where a friend of mine who is consistently constipated came to visit, and I have CSA boxes, and they're all, you know, lettuces and vegetables, and, you know, anyway, she actually was very ill and had to rest. I had to give her some kuzu to settle her intestines because she, you know, wasn't used to it.
Right. And so that's like doing soluble fiber. It's doing fiber in general that you gradually increase that. Even if it's soluble fiber, because we tend to think, oh, well, soluble fiber is totally fine. But yeah, but I mean, again, you take soluble fiber and you don't drink enough water with it. And typically understand that if you're eating soluble fiber in food, there's water already associated with it for the most part. It's when we start taking it in a powder or a pill form, and then we got to do enough water because it's basically going to go, it's going to suck up all that water in your gastrointestinal tract. But right. It creates bulk in your stool. So the bulk works a little bit different because now it starts to distend your intestines, and that kind of increases peristalsis. But that's kind of more indirect than the insoluble fiber. But that soluble fiber is really super important if we want to delay the transfer of glucose from your gastrointestinal tract into your bloodstream. Right? So that's the whole idea that fiber is non-digestible carbohydrate. That's a carbohydrate that we do not have the enzymes to break down. It's going to stay in your gastrointestinal tract. And for the most part, well, soluble fiber will slow down other things. Right, and so now, you know, the orangutans that eat a tremendous amount of plant fiber, their digestive enzymes can't break it all down either, but then they start to ferment it. They have a really long digestive tract, so they're basically just producing kombucha in their GI tract. I mean, it's not kombucha, but you know what I mean.
Yeah.
They're fermenting, and then they actually get energy from that fermentation product. It creates short-chain fatty acids and things that happen. So that's the whole idea of, are you eating fermentable carbohydrates, right? That's a whole nother another class, right? You've heard of FODMAPs?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so where all the indigenous cultures have eaten something like that, sauerkraut, kimchi.
Yep, and FODMAPs are actually just also carbohydrates that are able to be fermented by the bacteria in your gastrointestinal tract. So fermenting a food before you eat it means that you've actually added the bacteria first. If you eat a food that's a good substrate, right, what we would call a prebiotic, you put that in your large intestine where you have a lot of bacteria, you actually feed the bacteria, and now they'll start to ferment. Or you'll get products of that, you know, fermentation that's not really, you know, it's not fermenting for days. Maybe in some people, but for the most part, right, that's just, you're giving them a food substrate. And if you've got, you know, and that can be a good thing or it could be a bad thing, right? If you have a lot of bad bugs in your GI tract, if you have a, you know, imbalanced microbiome, eating a bunch of fermentable fiber may be problematic. versus if you have a good, healthy microbiome, eating all these fermentable carbohydrates would be really beneficial. Wow, one man's food is another man's poison.
Yes, indeed. A perfect time to jump in and say thank you to tuning in to listener-supported WDRT 91.9 here in Viroqua, Wisconsin. You're listening to The Skeptical Naturopath.
Yes. So
it's how you deal with what you've got, right?
Exactly. And so from a general standpoint, fiber is going to be beneficial because it delays the gastric emptying, right? So it delays the rate at which your stomach is going to kind of churn and dump its contents, which we call chyme, into your small intestine. So it just slows that down. It delays that. It makes you feel fuller. This is really good. But understand, in some people, that may not be so good, right? So again, it's kind of like we gotta look at it across the board, right? So generally, I think fiber is beneficial, but in some people, it maybe they need to do some other work on their digestive tract so that they can tolerate the fiber. But anyways, that's fiber first, and it's for that reason, right? There's really no, very little caloric value in fiber. There's some because, again, like I said, it can be fermented by the bacteria in your large intestine, and you will get some energy from that. So fiber first, then protein and fat, right? So protein and fat are also not going to spike the blood glucose, certainly not in the short run, right? They may have an effect sort of longer. I mean, fat doesn't get turned into glucose, but it becomes an alternate fuel source in there, right? And then protein, right? Protein really requires a lot of work for you to digest it, right? You have to produce hydrochloric acid in your stomach. It's a lot of work. And just that whole process of, you know, spending a lot of energy and a lot of time to digest is a good thing because it's going to delay the rate at which that potato reaches your bloodstream. So that's, right. You know, that's just what's going on in your digestive tract versus what the food industry did do it to begin with. Right? And we've talked about this, so the food industry is kind of interested in streamlining glucose. Streamlining it, meaning that you eat it and it turns into energy right away because that's why we eat. Or that's why we want to eat quick and we want to get energy right now. But, you know, we look at developing countries, that's not how it works. Developing countries really don't have refined carbohydrates because it's just another step and it, you know, costs money. They'll buy a sack of grain. And then some, you know, one family member has to spend a tremendous amount of time cooking food to make it more digestible so that they can actually use the calories that are in the food. Completely the opposite of what we do in this culture. And
right.
If we actually adopted
that.
I mean, that's macrobiotic too. Yes, right? Macrobiotic is just the idea that you are in the kitchen doing these things. You're figuring out how to transform that and how much do we have to transform it. But I'm taking an actual food item and putting that together instead of eating something that's pre-digested that's going to bypass all that.
It's a lot more work, but it's worth it.
Of course, right? But it's time, and that's what we don't have in this culture. It's time and convenience. People are like,
argue that's what we don't make. We don't make the time, because I think we do have time. We just have to prioritize.
How important is your time in the kitchen, right? For me, top of the list. But you get to that point, right? It's just that I didn't learn that growing up. I mean, I learned how to eat cereal. Quick.
Yeah.
Seriously, right? Honey Nut Cheerios. Oh, my God.
I know.
Because my mom
I'm watching it with my teenage daughter who, you know, has limited time before she goes to school. And she prioritizes what she looks like, you know, because she's a teenager. And, yeah.
So. Yeah, luckily I've got my teenager. He's caught on the protein thing because he's growing right now. So he's growing and he's now taller than me. But his incentive now is because he started to play basketball, right? So now he wants to get tall. I'm like, if you got to eat this way if you're going to keep growing right now, because he's actively growing right now. I'm like, we got to keep this up. So he's lock, stock, and barrel with me right now. But we'll see how long that lasts.
Oh, I saw his graduation picture, but he was sitting down on the steps of the school, so I couldn't tell that he's taller than you.
You can't because it's his legs. He's got much taller legs than me. But his torso, I'm long in my torso. He's not long in his torso, which makes it promising because then I think that he's still got, that torso is still going to grow. Yeah, he's taller than me now. That happened actually like, I think 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago. It's all over. Or maybe it's not all over. That's the goal, right? You want your children to be. But my two older ones didn't pass me. Gabriel actually passed me. So he's now, I now have to look up to him. He likes that. But I tell you, he's all over the what he's eating, you know, doing things that I say right now. Because it's going to help him grow. Anyways, we digress. So that's the, you know, so that's the fiber first, protein, fat, and then end with the starch, end with the sugar. I mean, I think they do that in China, right? Where they eat rice at the end of the meal? Is that just when people go over there that they won't serve you rice on the front end, they give it to you after the fact? I'm trying to think in Japan. I don't know that I never ate rice at the end of the meal. I'm trying to, maybe that's true.
I've never seen that.
I don't know, but... anyway, so to end with that. So in other words, you're occupying your stomach with other things that are going to delay the gastric emptying, and then you go ahead and throw a carbohydrate in there, you've already slowed that down.
Right.
Right, and these are simple things that you can do. You can just say, hey, I ate a meal, and wow, I really spiked my blood glucose. So you'd be like, okay, I'm going to eat that same meal, but I'm going to like pay attention to how I ate that and see if I eat the same exact meal, what happens. That's where a continuous glucose monitor is invaluable because it tells you the result of that experiment, like immediately.
Right, in real time.
In real time, right. You can try it on and say, did that make a difference, did it not, right? Like I said with me, I said this last time, right? If I want to trash my blood glucose, I eat ramen. Oh my gosh, it's terrible. And I love ramen, but you know, full disclosure is that I know what it's going to do to my blood glucose. And I'm hovering on that pre-diabetic anyways.
Yeah, right.
So make your choices, right? Like the rice thing too, right? I mean, I could eat rice every day, all day. I could eat a ketogenic diet, but you know, I'm not ketogenic, but I'm kinda, right? I'm low carb, but I will eat rice. But I'm like, I can see that, right? So now it's like, okay, am I deliberate about just putting the rice at the end of the meal? But then I'm like, do I want it at the end of the meal? Do I even want it? Maybe I just ditch the rice, right? I mean, this is kind of how I use that information personally.
Okay.
So that's food in the right order. The next one is add a green starter to your meals.
Green starter?
Green.
Is that what
she said? So she likes green. Does it have to be green? I think that I'm trying to think of green foods that have carbohydrates in them. Peas and, you know, green beans and peas maybe would be sources of starchy carbohydrates that would be green that she probably wouldn't, like, give the stamp of approval on. But I'm trying to think what else. But when we tend to think green, we tend to think spinach. We tend to think, you know, greens, kale. We tend to think of those things. Those are non-starchy carbohydrates. There's no carbohydrate in that. Right, so again, that's the idea that maybe it's just the same one before where you're eating food in the right order. You're just starting with a green food that has fiber in it. So instead of like flipping the order, you're saying, hey, I'm actually going to start, you know, I'm going to eat a salad, right? And that's what we do anyways. You eat a salad first with olive oil, with vinegar, with maybe some kind of, you know, fat source on it like cheese or nuts or, you know, something along those lines. Right, but so now we'll get into the, you know, potentially value of vinegar, but it's the same sort of deal that you're trying to set that digestive tract up to say, hey, let's try to get that gastric emptying delayed before we put the carbohydrate in. You know, and I want to be clear too here that, you know, she's not trying to say eat less carbohydrate. She's just trying to say these are the hacks that you do.
Work smarter, not harder.
Yeah, work smarter, not harder. And I think part of it, what she doesn't get is that, you know, maybe it is that we need to pay attention to how much we eat. Like, she's not paying attention to what I would say is glycemic load versus glycemic index. Do you remember those and what the difference is?
Oh, yeah.
Good reminder. Let's see what you know.
The load, I think, is what you're doing with what the glycemic index is, which is sort of an objective fact. about what is contained herein.
Yeah, that's right. So a glycemic index is saying, what's the quality of the carbohydrate? Like, how quickly does that carbohydrate spike my blood sugar? And we're really looking at that in isolation, too. Right, so for example, I know I've given this example that bagels and watermelon have the same exact glycemic index. Means that if you eat a purified amount of watermelon and purified amount of bagels, it's going to have the same. It's going to have the same curve. It's going to look exactly the same. Now that's you're eating it in isolation, not with anything else. Do we actually do that? Watermelon, perhaps. Bagel. I don't know that you're going to eat a bagel by itself. You put butter on it. You put something on it, right? So that's going to change the dynamics. But regardless, the quality of the carbohydrate, the ability to spike your glucose, is exactly the same between those. But their glycemic load is much different. So what's the glycemic load take into consideration? It's another layer.
How much of it you've eaten.
Ah, yes, how much of it you've eaten, right? Because how much carbohydrate are you getting when you eat a bagel? A tremendous amount.
Right, it is carbohydrate.
It is 100% carbohydrate. Whereas you eat a watermelon, 90%, I don't know, of that watermelon is what?
Water.
Water. So you've already diluted the glucose out of it. But understand that if we, like, took the water out of the watermelon, probably that glycemic index would be a lot higher. But that's not what we have. You can't take the water out of the watermelon. Oh, I suppose you could. Could you freeze-dried? Have I had freeze-dried watermelon? I had freeze-dried peaches. Have you had any freeze-dried fruit? It's very odd. But anyway, so in other words, basically this book is looking at how to hack the glycemic index, right? How to lower that spike, right? Because you could think of the glycemic index as being how spiky are you? How quick is that going to happen?
But right. With the idea, I'm sure, being that even your mentality is affected by something like that. It's not just your physical body. It's probably your mental capacity as well, right?
You mean mental function from having a quick energy and then starting to fall off the cliff?
Right.
Yeah, for sure. And that's kind of the reactive hypoglycemia, right? So that's the piece that, for the most part, you can't go low unless you went high.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So if you're on the kiddie roller coaster, you're only going to go a certain height and you're going to come down, but you're not going to come crashing down. Whereas when you spike up really quickly, you're going to fall quickly. I mean, I'm generalizing here, but understand that when you're falling is when you have symptoms. You don't fall when you're starting to rescue yourself. You actually feel better, right? But then now you're medicating yourself, or you're just saying medicating. You're eating something in order to get that energy or to get that glucose up, because your body's going to signal you when that glucose gets low. Like, you need to do something about this. But that happens on the drop end. Yes, so that's very true. And again, I do think that managing the glycemic index is super important. But what she doesn't talk about is how much glucose you're actually eating. Right? Because she doesn't really go in that part of it, which I think is an important part that's kind of forgotten. Right?
Do you think she does that just to maintain equilibrium, kind of, you know what I mean? Because then nobody hates her, because she's not telling them to change anything specifically. She's just saying, look at this.
Yeah,
right?
I think it's just, you know, you kind of get your niche. I don't know precisely, but the whole idea is that, again, understand, you write a book, you're writing a book for everybody.
Right.
You write a diet book, it's for everybody. So you're going to try to make it fit for everyone. Where it's never going to fit for everyone. And there's certainly people that can do all this kind of thing and they won't notice any difference because their glucose tolerance is good, even if they're eating McDonald's and eating, you know, crappy processed food, that they're able to withstand it better.
Yeah.
But who are those people?
Amazing.
And how much do you want to play Russian roulette? I don't know. That's how I look at it, because the standard American diet is a recipe for disaster. It's just, I don't know that's going to happen in 5 years, in 10 years, in 20 years. But I'm convinced.
And more so for the generations as they go on than for the previous generations. I think this whole argument that my grandfather was able to drink whiskey and smoke cigarettes and eat McDonald's into his later life, I think that has a huge amount to do with how he was raised in the first place, which was probably on a farm, and his parents were on a farm as well in their childhood. And now that we've become more and more industrialized and modernized, we don't have that, you know, what macrobiotics would call constitution to rely on.
Exactly, for sure. And that's the idea that now, you know, we set ourselves up quicker and we crash quicker, right? So then we're going to start seeing problems sooner rather than later. And that's where I think we see adult onset diabetes is turned into five-year-old diabetes, right? It's just that child's gene pool, whatever they've inherited, is not really conducive to the food environment that's there right now. And maybe they do things early and it would be better for them and they could, you know, build up some tolerance that then maybe it would last a little longer. And that's perhaps the environmental part of it, right? Having two parents that are diabetic and overweight and this kind of thing. So then whatever's pushed them to that limit, right, is the same thing that they're doing now with their child, right? I mean, well, they're eating however they're eating. I mean, of course, I'm like giving them ideas and suggestions and things that they can do, but regardless, something happened in a short period of time to set that up. But I think it's reversible as well. But it's hard to do, right? Now you're basically, you got to ditch the standard American diet. Anyway, so that's rule number two, right? About just again, it's the idea that we're trying to deal with that spike and that drop, versus not paying attention to how many carbohydrates are you eating. It is just that's just not what she's focusing on, and perhaps that's just, I don't know, that it's more controversial. It's just not, you start to water down your message, right? It's always easier, I think, to just kind of have your something that you can do kind of over and over and over.
And her point is, when was the book written?
I don't know. It's probably 7 years old. She's written other books. 7 years, maybe? Okay. I don't know. But, you know, so it's just the idea of, is she a one-trick pony? I don't think so. But, you know, she's certainly looking at that aspect and giving, you know, going down that rabbit hole completely. But not saying, hey, you need to cut your carbohydrates. I mean, I guess I don't know. I mean, we'll probably go online and find her opinion on a ketogenic diet. I mean, you get her opinion on a CGM. She's like, well, you don't really need to wear one. You just need to follow my rules. I mean, I'm generalizing here, but... But boy, you could wear a CGM. It's going to tell you that information. But it doesn't change the idea that these are things that you need to do. It's just whether you have that information to work with it. But again, I would say I like the information, and I like for people to see this makes a difference and it doesn't. Right? I've had many patients who wear a CGM, and I never see their data. They don't give it to me. They tell me what's happened because it's, I mean, it's information, and it's kind of like, and I'm still trying to figure out the app on there, and they've got to put it into another, they can get the information, but it's not like really super easy to just show it to me. It's not like a lab test. It's like, okay, we can go in there and I can go online and I can get all that information, but that's going to take me some time, and we would do it in the clinic, right? Which I can easily do, but oftentimes patients will just tell me, hey, this is what I've noticed. Here's what's going on. I do this and it makes a difference. I can tell. Great, right? It's information for you. But like I said, you can run an experiment and see the results right away. Okay, so that's number two, right? So start with a salad or eat something green to start with. And, you know, not like, what's a crappy green food? What's a processed green food that we don't want to eat?
There aren't many.
Yeah, probably like Sour Patch Kids grape or, you know, apple.
Is that green, though?
Yeah, green apple. Green apple Sour Patch Kids or something. I don't know. Anyways.
Maybe those veggie sticks. Right,
yeah,
like
those veggie sticks.
The green bean chips.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
Edamame that they've made into a chip.
But it's healthy. Come on. It's a healthy chip.
It's incredibly processed,
though. Oh my goodness. Yes, it is. I mean, it's the protein phase, right? We're all in this high protein, high protein, high protein. And how are you going to get high protein? Generally, you're going to do protein powder. Protein powder is not food. It's protein. It's isolated, refined, completely. Are there better ones? Yeah, there's better ones, but I'd rather have you eat food. But, you know, it's harder. So some people will do that, and I'm like, okay, maybe it's better than eating sugar, but you're still not eating food. Like, how do you do this with eating food is the idea. All right, well, that's number two. Where are we time-wise? We'll see. We're going to rip through these. Well, yeah, you'll see there's some repetition here, though. And the next one is stop counting calories. Like, don't count calories. Plus, you know, I sort of agree with that. It's kind of this idea that don't count calories, but calories still count. Does it make sense? Like, calories are certainly an aspect that we can use to kind of characterize things, but I think the counting of them becomes, on one level, completely overwhelming. Second of all, you don't actually know what you're eating. Plus, the whole idea is it's more of a kind of a gestalt, meaning that how do I change what I eat so that I actually eat less calories instead of focusing on eating less calories? You understand that we're trying to limit what we eat. And so we say, I'm not going to eat that. I'm going to cut my calories. Instead of saying, yeah, but perhaps I'm not eating the right fuel mix for me to get me to not eat calories because I'm hungry or I'm hangry. And how do I correct my hangriness so that then now I'm not eating six meals a day because I don't need to? Like, that's how I prefer to do it. So, I mean, I definitely agree with that, right, that this idea that don't count the calories. But calories still, like I said, they count. Let's just not focus on that. Let's just focus on how you feel and hunger and that kind of thing.
That makes sense.
Right? And, you know, the other thing is all calories are not created equal. You get a calorie, you get calories from fat and calories from carbohydrates. They're not processed the same in the body. Calories from protein, they go through different pathways. So that already, just knowing that, they're not exactly the same. And we can go into a lot of detail about that, but that's for the most part, they don't all work the same. If you want to rescue your blood sugar, if you're low, I mean, orange juice or instant potatoes, that's better. You're going to eat avocado? You're going to eat chicken breast? You're going to eat some butter? Nothing. Nada. You're not getting anything there, but you're eating calories. You're like, oh, but I need calories. No, you need glucose. Right, so that's where this is where the calorie thing kind of drops off, and that's where the whole low fat phase too, right? We go through our whole, you know, the 1980s year of the decade of oat bran, right? Don't eat fat, don't eat fat, don't eat fat. But what do we do as a result? We end up eating more carbohydrate. It's like, I'm fine that you cut the fat out, but don't replace it with something else, right? Our calories ended up going up while we were cutting the fat, and we didn't really even cut the fat that far.
Anymore. Right.
Yeah, right. So that's don't count calories. Next one is flatten your breakfast curve. So we already talked about this one, right? Cereal is just like...
I'm sorry, flatten your breakfast what?
Your breakfast curve. Like, we don't want you spiking at breakfast. We would rather have you spike in the evening and not spike in the morning. That's like the blood sugar roller coaster, blood glucose roller coaster. Meaning if you get on that blood glucose roller coaster to start your day, guess what? You stay on it all day. You're up and down and up and down and up and down. And when you're up and down, what's going on? You're eating more frequently. Right?
Yeah.
So again,
you're trying to make balance with all the things, right?
Exactly. So how do we decrease our eating occasions? You say, well, I'm just not going to snack. Well, perhaps change what you eat for breakfast and see if that then manifests as, wow, I don't need that snack. I'm not hungry. I mean, that's the goal. Instead of being like, wow, I got to eat something now.
Yeah, I mean, and that's a great rule of thumb is, can you make it to the next meal without needing a snack? I'm going to jump in and thank the listener for tuning in to WDRT 91.9, listener-supported radio. You're listening to The Skeptical Naturopath with Paul Rattay and Christina DeRocher.
Right. So we definitely... What was your thought that you ended with?
That it's a great way to look at how we can make it from meal to meal.
Right.
You know,
And not.
how well am I doing, gauged by whether or not I need a snack, you know?
Right. I
And
mean.
I have to say, with my daughter, that was a really hard habit to get out of, because it was part of her school routine for so long. And so we started looking at every 3 hour period as this, you know, oasis of, you know, clearly she's going to need some nourishment during that time. You know, so it can be a very easy habit to slip into.
Yeah, and I would say that's the food industry is really interested in that. Powers that be are interested in that. Here's snack time, here's snack time, here's snack time. I mean, they used to do that in the, you know, I know in England, you know, during sort of Industrial Revolution time with the factories and things, people would get their tea break, right? And in that tea, guess what? There was a lot of in that tea.
Sugar.
Sugar, right? Because it was that it was their little fix that they'd get some energy from that so they could keep going. Right? But then that but understand too, that's also the aspect of saying, hey, we got to make sure that they have enough energy. Because in that time frame, not that overconsumption didn't occur, but we'd be more worried about underconsumption.
Right,
Right.
right. And also, sugar is not a neutral. It's a negative. So you're going to need to eat something to replace those vitamins and minerals that were degraded
For sure. For sure.
to balance out the sugar intake.
Yep. Doesn't come for free.
Right. I
So.
know. That's what I tried. That was my mantra with my daughter for the longest time. But you
Yeah,
know, how much of it is going to translate into high school and college life is another story.
Yeah, but maybe it's going to be post-college. It'll come back, right?
Right,
It takes some
right.
time.
Yeah, patience is a
Yes.
virtue.
Yes. We just well, you know, I'm very consistent in my message. So my message hasn't really changed with my older boys. Oh, well, with Gabriel too. They you know, it hasn't changed. But he only knows that, whereas my other boys have seen it for 29 and 27 years. They're kind of used to that.
Right.
And how much does it translate to, you know, ongoing? But you know, my 27-year-old's married, so there's now he's, you know, navigating something different, navigating another person. And then my 29-year-old, not so much. But yeah, my 29-year-old's been, you know, drinking the Kool-Aid lately. He actually wants to learn to cook some of the things that I cook. I'm going to see him tomorrow.
Yeah.
He's coming through town tomorrow, and he'll get Hoppin' John tomorrow, which he loves. And I'm like, Sam, have you made it yet? I've given him the recipe. He won't be here early enough to make it with me, because it's like I'm going to just have to go. I mean, it's not hard to do, but he really doesn't. I don't think he has a clue. Like, he's got to start somewhere. Like, that's something that Gabriel will be better at, right? I mean, he will not leave my house until he knows how to make Hoppin' John, and he knows how to make black bean soup, and he knows how to cook chicken thighs properly, and, you know, this kind of thing. Cowboy beans. Those are things that I know that he loves, that as long as he can go from beginning to end, then I've accomplished that, right?
Yeah, totally.
A couple of things that he can just do. Anyways, all right, so that's flatten your breakfast curve, right? Stay away from cereal, right? And so again, that's the idea that you change what you eat for breakfast, and then you don't need that snack. Like, there's just that's a side effect of it. The side effect of eating cereal is you're going to have another eating occasion 3 hours later. And it's definitely the worst time to eat sugar and starches in breakfast. Like, better to eat them at later in the day. I call it kind of carbohydrate cycling. Better eat those carbs at night than in the morning. And even eating those carbs and eating those simple carbohydrates and the high glycemic, they'll actually help increase your serotonin. They increase insulin, and insulin helps transport more serotonin into your brain. So there's potential benefit there, right? Again, I want to be clear that carbohydrates are not bad guys. It's what we do to them that becomes the problem. But, okay, so flatten your breakfast curve. Next one is have any sugar you like. They're all the same. I'm not so sure about this one, right? And you know, I definitely agree there's, you know, no quote-unquote healthy sugar. But we've already talked about this, well, last time, about the difference between fructose and glucose, right? So that fructose, The thing with fructose and the agave nectar and this kind of thing is it does not boost your it does not spike your blood glucose. Right. So when you eat agave nectar, so a diabetic can basically find diabetic sugar products. And diabetic sugar yes. products are going to be what? What are they going to have in them?
Artificial sugar.
Well, artificial sugar for sure, but let's just say they get actually some real sugar. They actually get carbohydrate-laden sugar. But what would that be? That's not going to spike their blood glucose because they're like, it's safe for diabetics. We talked about this food item last month.
Carbs?
Yeah, we want more specific. Like, what kind of sugar are they going to eat?
Something that doesn't spike your glycemic index,
right. So right? We want something with a low glycemic index. And what has a low glycemic yes. index? What's something really super sweet that has a low glycemic index? You're overthinking, but it's anything with fructose in it, right? So fructose, fruit sugar.
Oh, fruit, yeah.
Right,
yeah,
like
yeah,
orange yeah. juice doesn't spike your blood sugar as quickly as that instant potatoes do.
Right.
Right. So fructose, right. because fructose is not available to your cells, it's not available to your brain. So when you eat fructose, again, we talked about agave nectar last month, right? So agave nectar being basically 100% fructose. So they call it a low glycemic sweetener. I don't think it's 100%, but it's close. So in other words, that's telling a diabetic, oh my gosh, I can eat this food and it's not going to spike my blood glucose. And that is true. But what's the problem with eating all high amounts of fructose? See, so fructose can't be utilized by any, it's only utilized by one organ system in your body. Do you want to guess what that organ system is?
I would say stomach?
Nope. I tell my students this, if I ever ask you an organ question, it's always, the answer is always the liver. Okay, liver. Always. 95% of the time it's liver, 5% of the time it's adrenal.
Okay.
Just
and
answer
of course
liver.
You're gonna have huge digestive issues eating so much fruit.
That's possible, right? If you're eating fruit, but if you're doing agave nectar or you're eating fruit juice, you can kind of bypass that a little bit, right? So now you don't have the fiber. That's the fiber in the fruit may actually delay the rate at which the fructose is going to hit your liver. But the deal with fructose is 100% of it is going to your liver and it has to be processed in your liver, and that's a burden on your liver. So they call, you know, Robert Lustig, who's written all this or done all the things on fructose is the devil. Like he says, fructose is alcohol without the buzz.
Yeah. Okay. Wow. That's a really good way of looking at it.
Yes. So it's a burden. But the thing is that fructose isn't all bad either, because fructose also tells your body to make more glycogen. And that's not a bad thing. So again, for me to just say fructose is the devil and never eat it, this kind of thing, it's again a tolerance piece. Mm-hmm. I mean, we've been talking about glucose tolerance, but I think there's also a fructose tolerance. And think about it, you know, you eat a bunch of fruit, you would eat fruit when it's ripe, and you'd eat fruit in the fall time where you're going to hibernate soon, or at least bears will, right? So you're actually trying to store some fat. That may be beneficial based on where you're at geographically and the time of season and that type of thing. So perhaps just this idea that fructose is the devil is not quite true. But we eat a lot of it, and it does not spike the blood glucose, and a diabetic may say, hey, I can eat this. It's not a problem. You're just starting to damage, you're burdening your liver. And understand, if you burn your liver, you may lose the ability to tolerate the potato that you're eating. So this is like backdoor destruction.
Yeah.
I think this is a big deal, right? So we see non-alcoholic fatty liver disease. That would be right up there with with diabetes and obesity as being an epidemic. The numbers are like 18 to 24% of Americans have some semblance of fatty liver. Now, that's a spectrum disorder, right? You may just have a little bit of fat infiltration in your liver, but that is not normal. We should not see it. That's ectopic fat. That is bad. But it's like, oh, it's not that bad. It's just a little bit. Don't worry about it. Just lose weight and, you know, exercise more. Are you kidding me? I need to really focus on this. But they find fatty liver or non-alcoholic fatty liver disease by accident because somebody did an ultrasound. And they're like, oh, well, you have the beginning of fatty liver disease. People are like, wow, what do I do about it? And they're like, well, lose weight, exercise more. Wow, isn't there something else? Yeah, get rid of, cut back on your fructose. We're saying non-alcoholic, so alcohol is not playing a role in there. I mean, alcohol is the quickest way to trash your liver. Fructose is not far behind. But again, fructose does have some value. So I'm not sure that I necessarily agree have any sugar you like. They're all the same. Now, I would say that when we're comparing honey and maple syrup to the plain white stuff, for all intents and purposes, they're mostly the same. Not quite. I think honey and maple syrup may have some potential protective qualities in them, but not enough to say, oh, it's fine. I can eat all I want. It's still a concentrated sweetener. Be careful. What's the least amount that you need?
I'm going to give you a 5-minute down here. I don't want to say warning, but
warning. What's less than a warning? That's moderate.
Notification.
Just a note. 5 minute. A 5 minute note. Anyways, so that's the sugar thing that I'm going to say. I do think there's a difference between them. Next on the list is pick dessert over a sweet snack. I think that's obvious. The sweet snack means that's what you're eating between a meal. A dessert means now you've ended a meal with something sweet that's got carbohydrate in it. Again, that follows the eat foods in the right order.
Yeah.
Don't eat the sweet snack. Eat it at the end of a meal. That's just good hygiene anyways. I think most people would say that anyways. Okay, next on the list is reach for vinegar before you eat. Here's the vinegar part.
Okay.
So vinegar is basically a weak acid that mimics hydrochloric acid. It's not as strong, but it has that effect that it can start to engage that stomach digestion piece. And by doing that, it delays gastric emptying. We really like to delay gastric emptying. That's a big deal. We talked about fiber doing that. So fiber has the ability to do that. And certainly vinegar has the ability to do that, or acid, or, this kind of thing. So super important that's going to just slow down the rate at which that carbohydrate or that glucose is going to hit your bloodstream. That's big thumbs up. So that's like kombucha, maybe there's some benefit to that. I mean, the weak acid can kind of have an effect on your teeth and your enamel and that kind of thing, right? I go through this all the time.
In macrobiotics, it would be miso. Same kind of idea. You would have a miso soup to start the digestive processes going before you
Fantastic.
Eat.
Fantastic. So miso is certainly umami. Do we think of that as kind of vinegar? I'm trying to think. Does that have... You're using it as kind of like an aperitif.
Mm-hmm.
Is that kind of the right way to characterize that?
Yeah.
Like it's just getting that going. Yeah, I wonder about that. But yeah, definite beneficial properties in that. Okay, next on the list.
We're at time in 2 minutes. So
I see 53. I see that I think that I have four minutes.
Oh, okay. So you're going to do one more? Great. Go ahead.
You'd be surprised that I can finish this.
I would be surprised.
When I need to, I can really cut to the chase. So next one is after you eat, move. Which I think there's truth to that, right? You'll use more glucose from your bloodstream if you move after you eat. The question is, what kind of movement are you doing? Right, the kind of movement makes a difference. So the higher your heart rate, the more glucose you're going to burn. The lower your heart rate, the more fat you're going to burn. Now you still burn glucose even if you walk, but I do think that's useful. I don't know that that's enough though, right? So maybe when you're younger, and she's kind of young too, right? You're a little bit more metabolically flexible, and what I mean by that is that you can do some things pretty quickly, and exercise may have. You're much more, I don't know if flexible is the right word. But that you know you that,
you have a greater range to play, so to speak.
Yeah, and there's not so much fat that's there either, right? So the cumulative effect, I think that that has an effect on that too. But regardless, I think that there's value. I mean, after you eat, move. But before you eat, move. Even when you don't eat, move. Right? Do you know what I'm saying? Just move.
Yes, just move.
Just move. But yeah, on some level, to try to help clear the bloodstream. All right. Next is, if you have to snack, go savory. Again, I think that's obvious, right? We want savory, we don't want sweet. But understand that the sweet doesn't necessarily mean it has a high glycemic, right? So sweet, again, if they put a bunch of fructose in it and it's sweet, they could make it seem like it's beneficial. It doesn't spike your blood sugar, but you're burdening your liver. Right? So, savory, I think I like the savory better, but you could certainly still get high glycemic sort of snack stuff. I say if you have to snack, don't.
Yeah, calories count. Don't count calories, but calories count.
Yeah,
if you go back to that, then you kind of know how often you should be doing this snack thing.
Right. We really want to get rid of the snack thing. That's a problem. And again, you know, if you have to snack, then I would say then you're eating something wrong, right? So figure out like how to correct breakfast or whatever so that you can go without.
My perspective. Why can't you make it from meal to meal?
Yeah, and for me, intermittent fasting is the goal. It's not the cause. So to all of a sudden say, oh well, I'm not gonna drop a meal. I mean, I'm fine with that, but I got people that'll strangle me if they're dropping a meal. So they're not ready to drop a meal. In other words, change what you're eating and that pattern of things so you don't have to graze, that you can get away with eating two meals a day and see what happens. But that's now changing your fuel mix instead of just saying, oh, well, I'm going to just eat this.
Right. Well, and as a perimenopausal woman, I have to say, always take into consideration where you at, where you're at in your life. I'm professionally cleaning homes for a living, working practically full time. And I'm definitely perimenopausal. And so for me, for a while before I started this business, I'm trying to, I'm going at it pretty hard now, I'm definitely working almost 35 hours a week now. But before that, I was on that level of eating two meals a day. And now I'm like, I really need three meals.
Yeah, that's right.
That's
right.
But so it has everything to do with where you are in your life too.
Yeah. And it's matching that, right? But you're matching it instead of being overcompensating for it. Right. But because if you underdo it, then you're going to know.
Yes. And I won't be able to maintain the lifestyle that I want to maintain right now.
Correct. And then we're down to the last one. I get it done. Put some clothes on your carbs, which we've kind of already talked about, right? So eating carbs by themselves, just eat something with them, whether it's a fiber source, whether it's protein, whether it's fat, right? So this is just the idea that that will have some benefit on there. I do want to be a little bit warning, because eating carbohydrates and fats together tend to not increase satiety, though. So not increasing satiety means that you may end up, not feeling full because you've combined a fat with a carbohydrate. So that's a story for another day, but that's an important thing. But again, just not eating the carbs by themselves is a way to sort of mitigate that spike. All right. I finished.
Perfect. Okay. Well, until next time, Paul, I look forward to our next show.
All right, Christina, maybe we'll talk about my goal is to talk about the myths of keto. As much as I like to use keto, I also like to talk about it's not the answer for everything.
Wow. Okay. I look forward to that for sure.
All right. Sounds good, Christina.
Okay. Take care, Paul.
Yeah, you too. Bye-bye.
Bye.